I wanted to ask a question, and you might have to think about it a little bit, or you might not. I don't know.
Why am I not surprised? There's always a catch with Davina. It's always
There's
the
no
first thing
catch.
that gets
This
it.
no, this is
Right,
no, this
hit
is
us.
Welcome to Nourished by Spinnies, the podcast which promises to inspire you to eat well and live well. I'm Davina Devecha.
And I'm Tiffany Eslick. This is a space where we hope to nourish your heart and soul. On this show, we chat with leading players in the food community, from farmers to foodies, as well as health and well-being experts. It's all about engaging conversations and fresh ideas.
Today, we're delving into sustainability in the food industry with Naima Daz, who is the founder of Gates Hospitality, which owns a number of award-winning brands, including Reform Grill, Bistro des Arts, Publique, and Folly, a Michelin Bib Gourmand restaurant that also made it to the Gourmio list this year. And from Folly comes our second guest, Bojan Cirinic, who is their exec chef. For a bit of context, the UAE declared 2023 as the year of sustainability, and we're gearing up to COP28, the annual conference of parties, happening at the end of November right here in Dubai. You know, Naim, I've always thought is you've tried in a lot of different things to take the lead on certain things that eventually became trends, perhaps. I think it was back in 2018. Maybe that, you know, you'd taken off straws as well from the restaurants, and you know, if people wanted them, they had to ask for them. And not a few places were doing that, but it wasn't quite widespread as it is now. So tell me about your approach towards sustainability when it comes to Gates Hospitality as a whole and the restaurants that you have under that umbrella.
For Gates, really what we're trying to practice is the outside influence, because within our own venues, our own buildings, we control what happens. It's if you take the supply chain, people come to you with deliveries still with plastic boxes and plastic bags, and trying to control others' behavior and particularly the fact that it has an impact on cost, it's very difficult. And the minute you start analyzing, I mean, you take a dishwasher, you open the dishwasher, the rack itself is plastic. So it's an endless mind shift. Otherwise, you can't really win. And sadly, as humans, we always try and see where there is a capital gain on this. So because today, if you look at the supply chain, if you take plastic cutlery and take wooden cutlery, the gap between those pricing, and this is a small thing, but if you do a lot of deliveries and if you do a little bit of calculations at the end of the month, it's a massive expense for businesses. So what's the easy thing to do is just go plastic. And that, I think, this is where I really like to see the authorities coming in and making sure that there is a lot of options for operators. So suppliers cannot actually be saying, well, they need us. This is a price. Take it or leave it. So the more options, the more varieties, the more affordability, I think people will eventually make the change. But at the moment, being a cost factor, everyone's trying to shy away because we're not being forced.
But is it, I mean, are you finding that, you know, suppliers, like you mentioned, are they more receptive now to what can be done or what they can do?
Look, I'm going to let Bojan answer this because the answer is yes. Yeah. But it's how much pressure do we put on them?
Gotcha.
Some of them, they actually practice and they have the same approach as Naim just mentioned, while there are still others who don't necessarily, I have said, they don't care. And they just go with, for as long as they can, they know they will be doing what they do. And when the moment comes that they are forced to change, then they will find some alternative. We also, in the restaurant, when we receive something, especially if it's in a plastic crates or stuff, we always return it. We don't want to keep it, and we take it upon ourselves to go and throw it in a bin or something like that. So we try to reuse it at least.
Have you ever, I mean, just curious, have you ever stopped working with a supplier if you weren't able to get what you need? Or
stopping a supplier, we haven't really stopped working with someone, but have we sent them back with goods? Yes, we have. And I think that's a very strong message, is because it's actually a cost factor for them having to take the goods back and repackage it, rebring it, and it causes a little bit of a stir, a few phone calls here and there, and people use you know, a few terms that you don't really want to hear, but you know what, sometimes if you have the luxury of time to be able to send stuff back, I think it's very powerful.
We also I think that one of those sustainable approaches that seem small, but actually I think it's very significant, is that we really base all the ordering and supply on a very minimum number of supplies per week. Mm-hmm. So we developed kind of a system where we do it only twice a week, so that we make sure that we get everything that we need at the beginning of the week. And we use that up just before weekend, then we get another delivery for the weekend. So it's minimum involvement of all the suppliers with their trucks, with their planes or whatever they use to do this delivery. So that's our small contribution to more sustainable deliveries. It's not just we are a sustainable restaurant, but we have deliveries every day for a very small amount and very small deliveries. So
yeah, and these, like you say, these small things just add up. That makes a difference.
So look, Phil, I'll give you a classic example. For Ziggy Bay, what we do, we have a company in Dubai that actually does all the consolidation for us. So instead of having one truck delivering milk, going all the way across the border, over the mountain, delivering, we still need the product. But we have one organization that's actually consolidating everything for us. So it's the same truck. It's affordable. It's a good solution. And for us also, it makes it easier receiving, because we know one truck is coming per day or per week or whatever the frequency is, delivering the goods. And, you know, when we started, this was like unheard of.
Mm.
Do you want me to go and collect milk for you? And they, yeah, well, that would be good. Put a little margin on it, because we understand there is a cost involvement. There's time, there's labor, there's petrol and all of that. But at least big picture stuff, there's a saving. So all of these things, look, again, going back to 2018, we're talking about straws. Now, really, if anybody talks to me within my own organization about straws, I'd want to strangle them because we've gone way beyond that. Now we're talking about traceability rather than just sustainability. And I think this is really what we should be talking about, because if we know where it's coming from, who's behind it, what's the farm, what's the cycle, it's a story, but it's also an engaging story and beneficial story.
And I think with that, I mean, you recently signed with Botanica, didn't you? That's great. Do you want to tell me a bit more about that so our listeners can also know what you're doing?
When we first time went to the facility and we saw what they built and what they're doing, we were just like, wow.
It's this a vertical farm, right?
It is.
Yeah. This is a state-of-the-art facility, and what they came up with and how, what approach they have to what they grow, how they grow it, that they know every detail about it. And we were like, we really want to work with these people, because we really share the same idea, and then that's how we want to operate, and we want to be associated with people who take so much care and pride in what they do. And we were like, it will be easy for us as well to tell our story, because we have an amazing produce, we are very good at what we do, so the result is just going to be even better.
Places like Botanica, really, if you think about the technology, the hygiene, the practicing, and not forgetting the flavors. I don't know if you tried anything.
I have. But it's incredible. Sell them here as well.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. You have them in the shops downstairs. Yeah. The flavor is incredible. So you know freshness. You know the whole cycle. And for me, that's traceability. You know who's behind it. And you know it's actually doing good for the environment. Principally. So whilst we're getting freshness, whilst we're getting produce that is very specially made for Folly, Reform has a special order, Folly has a special order, Bistro has a special, again, based on the concept, based on the ethos of the brand, they work with you. As long as you guarantee your volume, it works. And, you know, from a freshness perspective to the consumers, it doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's fascinating to see this journey. And as I'm sure it is for you, I think about 7 or 8 years ago, when we would ask chefs about, you know, getting it locally, it was just like, we don't have enough coming. And it was just, and now to see this, it's amazing to see in a few short years where this industry has come. But like Botanica, are there any other, I guess, examples of ways in which you're engaging with that local community, or kind of making sure that you're reducing your carbon footprint as well to doing that?
We have tons of engagements, and really, as you highlighted earlier, I think we like to be the voice of authority for the industry, and we like to take that first step. And if you take the life of Gates, everything we have embarked on becomes the norm eventually with other operators. To give you another example, we are actually partnering up with the DCT, the hotel school. And for me, that's a sustainable project, because what we're doing is we're offering individuals a career, a future. Yeah. So whilst they're studying in a classroom, they'll come and work with Boyan, they'll work with a Michelin restaurant, with a Gourmet restaurant, 50 best restaurant, as a stage, as an experience.
Yeah.
You don't get that in the world. So for us, that's my CSR to the community, to the industry, giving back in order to make sure that people get the knowledge, the depth, the know-how. And of course, you know, the whole kitchen life, I call it, has changed. Today, yeah. Kitchen life is about education. It's about nurturing individuals. No more throwing pots and pans at people and using foul language. Well,
occasionally. Well,
but no, reality is really CSR for us. And this is all about giving back.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, there is a cost to the business. We understand that, but we need them anyhow. We need individuals in the kitchen. As long as individuals have the right willingness, the right mindset to become and give the industry back, that's all we ask.
Have you already had a few students come in and work with you? Or
we are in a process now of, as Naim said, it's just been agreed.
It's in the making. Yeah, it's in the making. So there will be actually a major announcement coming soon. So amazing. You're privy to the sneak preview, if I may.
Woohoo! We like this. That.
and look, really, I said to the team, so I've selected a handful of chefs that I believe can actually develop individuals and a group of GMs as well who will also help front of house, because this is about the full team rather than just culinary. For DCT to be coming to Gates, not going to a large hotel corporation or another competitor, we're proud of doing that.
Yeah.
And that for us is essential because we are recognized as a part of the community.
When we come back, we'll talk about some of the concepts that Gate Hospitality is working on for COP28.
Davina, let's take a minute to talk about one of my favorite things, cheese.
Do you have a favorite kind of cheese, though, or is that too hard a question?
Absolutely. I'm not even going down that road. But I know the cheese I want to talk about right now, and that's Parmigiano Reggiano. I was in Italy earlier this year and found myself surrounded by wheels of them stacked into towers, almost like a skyline. This is at our supplier Zanetti, which is now in its fourth generation, having started in 1900 by Guido Zanetti. His great-grandson Paolo Zanetti gave me a fantastic tour.
Most importantly, did you get to try both the Parmigiano Reggiano and the Grana Padano?
Yes, absolutely. I tried various wheels of cheese of different ages, and Paolo really went into detail about like which cheese goes with which dish that you're trying to serve.
For a big occasion, like together with a very good Italian red wine or champagne, it's good to have a very well mature Parmigiano Reggiano, like a 3 years old Parmigiano Reggiano. If you want a product to be grated on pasta, like 60 months old Grana Padano is very good. And as a table cheese or as an appetizer cheese or a piece of cheese, I used to have a Parmigiano Reggiano, well mature Parmigiano Reggiano, like 3 years old Parmigiano Reggiano.
So the next time you're serving something special for your friends or family, or just indulging in a slice of pizza or leftover pasta for breakfast, grate some of our Spinney's Food Parmigiano Reggiano or Grana Padano today.
Welcome back. You're listening to Nourished by Spinney's and my conversation with Naim Madad and Boyan Cirinic as we gear up to COP28 in Dubai in a few weeks. Sustainability is quite like holistic. There's so many different aspects 100%. To it. You know, we're talking packaging, we're talking ingredients, we're talking community as well.
Yes.
There's just so much. And one of the things that also it's, you know, it's an issue I guess we've talked about in, you know, restaurants in the region and worldwide, I guess, around food waste. That's something that's quite important to look at. Has there been anything in terms of strategies that you employ at, you know, Folly specifically, but just generally across Gates to help reduce that and mitigate the effects of it?
I think that in Folly, we simply just, we don't believe in food waste. Food is precious and we should not be wasting it. And as I mentioned it earlier, that we develop our system of ordering in the same way we have the system of what we use and how we use. Mm. So everything that is ordered is measured in grams, not in kilos or cartons or stuff like that. And we really cautious about how much do we order, how much do we need, what do we actually need to operate in the level that we are. Obviously, we don't see that as a challenge, but we simply just work harder to make sure that we don't have food waste. And if it happens that something is extra, that we have something left over, we have a quite big team. So we treat ourselves sometimes with a nice dinner.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I'm just gonna pretend to block my ears. No, I didn't hear any of this. On a serious note, actually, in fairness to the comment, it's a very powerful statement. The fact that we don't actually have different food orders for the team members, it tells you that we treat everyone, again, from an education, from a rewarding, the quality of the food that the guest is getting is our internal guests are getting the same food as well. And it's essential. So it does help the food wastage, if there is anything.
Yeah.
We're not suggesting here that our team members get second class or leftovers food. Not at all. But it's all about portioning and making sure that we order correctly and rightly.
And that's something that's kind of across the board for everything under Gates.
Yes. Look, again, our team members eat in the dining room. They eat in the restaurant. They don't go around the back. We eat. So what's essential is that you form that sense of community. You form that belonging. So yes, we may argue during shift or after shift, but then when we sit down and eat, we all eat together. We all eat the same food. Not he gets a quality dish, I get another quality dish, and the steward's going to... No, everyone gets the same pot and we all eat there. And that sense of community becomes very powerful for the business.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you mentioned education a few times as well. And it's also about, I think, educating or at least having that conversation with your customer too. Is there a way that you engage with, you know, diners in the restaurant around sustainability practices? Do they ask questions, or how does that work? You know, because it's important to, I think sometimes, I feel like sometimes some chefs or restaurateurs don't shout about their achievements enough. Boyan is raising his hand. He's like, I need to talk about myself more. So, you know, sometimes I feel like they don't because... Yeah, they just don't do it. And you want to be able to shout out about the amazing things you're doing as well, not just from a PR perspective, but just to kind of educate.
Well, on some of our menus, we have a QR code, but that's not for ordering. The QR code is telling you about our sustainability journey and story and how we do things. I mean, for Reform, a gastropub, last season, we had a vegetable garden outside. The chef was out there and... With all due respect, we weren't producing tons of anything, but the story mattered. And the interest from the marketplace, from the regulars, from the media was incredible. Because again, if you take a folly, you'd expect that. The herb garden's been there from day one, before the restaurant opened actually.
Yeah.
But from a Reform perspective, to have that as an important KPI for the team, for the business, is very powerful.
Yeah. And do you find that customers ask questions as well?
There is, especially now, like people are more cautious about what they eat, where the food comes from. Therefore, they want to know more about it. It's no longer just interesting, oh, how did you make this? But people actually ask, oh, what is the fish comes from? Where is this vegetable from? And when you come across such guests who are genuinely interested in what they're eating, then it's a blessing because then you actually get to talk about what you do and you kind of like show how much you're proud of everything that you do, because doing interesting dishes, being a good chef, that's all amazing. But you need nowadays, I think it's more important to not just talk about, oh, I'm sustainable, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, but actually live that way and work that way, so then your peers in the industry will also follow the same way. And as Naeem said, I think it's kind of like domino effect later on. So
look, also what's very powerful, Davina, is what happens when our people go back home. So when they go back to their respective countries, the amount of education they naturally take with them is very, very powerful. And they bring a lot to the equation also. They have different practices back in their own countries. So there is a massive learning. There's a massive community sense where everyone feeds off. Going back to your question about other guests asking questions, we're seeing younger generation have a genuine interest in where is it coming from and where is it made and how long has it been with you. And so I think generally the market is shifting into that knowledge inquisitiveness.
I did want to talk about what Gates as a whole is doing at COP, which is coming up very soon. I know there's a few concepts that you're working on. Do you want to give us a sneak peek into what's coming?
Sure. So look, again, the news hasn't really been shared publicly, so I'm proud to be talking to you about this. And what the focus has been with COP and Expo City in general, Unlike Expo 2020, where we've basically have gone around the globe, brought some amazing talent to the equation to make sure that it's globally international, this time around, we've gone against that kind of grain altogether.
Okay.
And really, the focus has been is to identify and attract local talent.
Yep.
We have Chef Sarah Akil joining us. And I think, look, she's an amazing talent,
yeah.
Young, independent, female, and amazing, amazing attention to details when it comes to food and assembly of cultures and cuisines together. I think it's incredible. We have Chef Faisal Nasser as well. Again, another amazing Emirati talent, young, fresh, eager, who has as well a lot of flavors and herbs that he's using that is very much local to the land that we've never played with. We've never consumed at this depth. So that's another. He's actually doing two concepts. And one of the concepts, we're doing toasty. It's basically a cheese toast sandwiches and a soup bar, which has not been done in this part of the world.
Yeah.
And why soup? Is it going to be popular? I don't think it's about being popular. It's about changing the mindset and bringing something new to the equation on the F&B rich tapestry. We also have Chef Junior Nudge as well, who's joining us also. Again, been in the region for a long time. That's a play on Bistro Dessert. So we're doing Brasserie Dessert there as well. So, and of course, our beloved Reform will be featured there as well. So we have lots and lots. I think we have in total seven new concepts will be actually for the duration of Expo City season, as we're calling it.
And why would you say that this is an exciting project for you in terms of something that's quite different? You know, they're obviously local talent, amazing. But yeah, anything else that makes this special?
Look, it is a pop-up. And I think ultimately at the end of these 6 months, five months, whatever it is, one of my objectives is to see how do we find these individuals, this talent, these chefs, a permanent location in the UAE. And if you, wind the clock back a little bit, that's how a lot of concepts came to life.
Yeah.
So you work with individuals. If the chemistry is right, you have a 5 months duration. We have COP28, 14 days of absolute, heavy volume. Again, we need to be ready for that.
Yeah.
And then you have the festive season. You have the holy month of Ramadan also coming. So it's until the end of March. Our calendars are fairly tight, I must say. So we're already looking for next summer.
Yeah.
We haven't even exited the first summer.
It is, yes. Busy season is definitely upon us with, kind of the different, initiatives or approaches that you've taken towards different forms of sustainability. What is next on your radar? What is it that you want to do next on this front?
Look, for me personally, I think this is it's not a revolution, it's an evolution. It's always going to continue. And if you take, again, talking about Bustanica, we can talk about Diba oysters as well.
Yeah.
If you talk about the fish farming that's really going to take shape on this beautiful land, I think that a lot will happen. I think what we will see, a lot of manufacturing taking place. We'll see a lot of food security initiatives taking place. And I think that's really what we should be looking at is how do we make sure generations to come, not a generation, generations to come, are sorted and have a plan in place. Unlike our generation and the previous, we've basically consumed a lot rather than planned a lot. So I think our age now is about planning and making sure that the sustainability is really part of our life. It's not an additional bit. You know, running the water when you're brushing your teeth is definitely not necessary.
Mm.
But again, we haven't been taught. We haven't been educated. If you take the school curriculums today, there is actually a sustainability aspect.
Oh, okay.
Unlike my days, we focused on chemistry and biology and math and languages. That was our education system. No one really spoke about it. Sustainability was family.
Mm-hmm.
To save food, to save whatever it is. But as far as sustainability education, really, it didn't really happen. So I'm very glad, and that's why we're doing what we're doing with DCT, is to say, let's take the blinkers off and let's really focus on educating, because education is a very, very important, paramount of importance for everybody. And again, when they go back home, they take that with them and it becomes the norm.
Yeah. Boyan, anything at the restaurant specifically that you're hoping to kind of look at next, perhaps?
To be honest, I'm very excited about the whole development around sustainability. And I'm very happy that we are not relying heavily on imported produce. that the quality of the produce that is being grown here in Dubai, in UAE in general, is very good. That the some of the vegetables and the fruits that we use in a restaurant that are grown here are sometimes that taste better than the ones that are imported, and they're fresher, obviously. So I'm looking forward to more varieties, not just with the vegetables and fruits, but maybe with the protein. We never know. So that's something that I would really like to see happening. So because it will be interesting for us to work with such produce, because and for people to actually taste and have opportunity to use something that is actually grown very close to where they are.
Yeah, and it makes such a difference to taste as well.
Taste profile is totally different. I mean, last night I was fortunate to have dinner in Folly actually with a couple of friends. I ate actually a rabbit. You don't see rabbit on the menu here. But again, the rabbit is, we're not bringing rabbit fillets. The chefs are using the whole rabbit.
Right.
Different soups, different sauces, different juice. So there's a lot that's being really used. And sadly, going back to education, a lot of the young chefs today will only order the fillet. And that we need to change. We need to make sure that the whole carcass is used, the whole animal is used.
Nose to tail, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And for me, that's cooking. That's understanding, because from one beast, one animal, you can actually do a lot.
Mm.
But again, if you have rabbit on the menu and it doesn't sell, what do? We take it off, rather than gradually educate the market and help. And really, Folly has been a pioneer in this. Some of the items that have been on the menu, your pigeon,
duck, venison, for example.
Yeah.
We like to use ingredients that are not everyday, because I strongly believe that if you already made an effort to go out in a restaurant, you put on your nice clothes, you do your hair, you go to the restaurant, don't go just to eat chicken. You can stay at home and eat chicken. Try something new.
Yeah.
It's educational as much as it's experience.
Yeah.
So that's something that I always thought that restaurants should be. So as Naeem mentioned, the rabbit, I'm very happy that we're using that, because it's we're not buying imported ingredients. It's actually from Abu Dhabi. So you can't get more sustainable than that. It's a UAE produce. It's grown in Abu Dhabi. And the opportunity that we have to work with produce like that is endless, because it's not, if you take, for example, the rabbits from Europe, the wild rabbits, the texture, the flavor is different. On another hand, this produce is also has its own characteristics, so you can use it in many different ways. So that's, for us, that's very inspiring, and many ideas come out of produce like that. So as I said, I would really like to see a lot more of those things here, because it will be much more interesting for us to work and come up with new dishes and work on that Dubai cuisine and some recognition for Dubai and its food.
I wanted to ask a question to each of you. What is it that nourishes your soul? And silence.
Yeah, look, it's such a fundamental and really strong question, right? It depends on, I think for me, it's unconditional love, because really, if you think about that, it's, you know, at stages in your life, people like you for different reasons. But unconditional love is they like you for who you are and what you do. And for me, that's nourishing. For me, that's refreshing. And you know, there is no agenda. There's no purpose. It's who you are is what they admire and appreciate and respect in you. So that's my quick two bobs worth.
I'm not sure I can top that off, but
yeah, you can.
No, I agree with that. That's actually a really good point. Also, definitely, it's also part of what I do. What I do is giving pleasure with what I do, with the food that I cook. Definitely, when I see that makes someone else happy, it's kind of like, it is definitely food for soul. In my case, so.
Yeah, look, if you take the essence of hospitality generally, right? And again, sadly, we have to remind people what hospitality is all about. This is not about commercialism only. There is a cycle of people come out to have a good time. No one comes out to complain. I can assure you that. Everyone comes out to actually indulge and have a good time. So if we keep reminding ourselves that they're coming out to have a good time. How do we read their needs and fulfill that aspiration? It's amazing because people do save money to come out. It's an occasion for some. Some come out quite often. Some it's an occasion. So if we know how to deliver a service on brand and stick to that, I think it's very powerful. And on a closing note, Davina, for us at Gates, four brand DNA pillars, right? So it's innovate, which I think we do that extremely well. We have engagement. Again, engagement is about making sure that when you come to reform at the bar, I don't really want to hear someone asking you, would you like a drink? I'm there for a drink. But ask me, how are my kids? Did you find a park easily? Is it warm outside? Did you watch the cricket? Did you watch the footy? Did you have that engagement? Because all of a sudden, you have a bonding. It's happening. Belong is another one. We feel that at Gates and with Gates Way app, that the loyalty program that we have, you can use it across all of the venues. And it's not about discount. It's about giving back. So we recognize your habits and you can use that across all of our venues. So enrich, belong, innovate. And last but not least, it's the engagement factor as well. These are, for me, the pillars of what the organization is built on. And if we practice all of those all the time, commercials will come to us because people will use your services, frequent your places. And for Reform to be celebrating 10 years this month, you know, again, so someone said to me, isn't that old? I said, it's very old for this part of the city.
Oh my God, yeah, because we met 10 years ago as well, just a few months before it opened.
100%. 10 years. And it really is an institution today. I don't think we should be saying it's old. We should be saying it is an institution. This is, and I'm encouraging people to talk about this because to survive in Dubai and still be trading very strong, still an attraction and a destination venue, it's a very powerful and rewarding statement.
I like how all three of you focused on sustainability across the different areas. So it wasn't just about food waste, but also packaging, talent, and education. And also how it's about keeping that going beyond just COP28.
Yeah, so, you know, Naeem was also plotting out his calendar and he was saying that he is busy up until next summer, which is quite scary, but also impressive.
He is a very busy man.
Yes.
Also, Naeem mentioned Ziggy Bay. You know, we spoke to the executive chef just before the summer about their approach to sustainability. You'll find it in your podcast app, or we'll leave a link in our show notes.
This episode was brought to you by Spinneys and is hosted by me, Davina Devecha, and Tiffany Eslick. We're produced by Chirag Desai. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok for more. You can also visit us at spinneys.com, where you can shop for fresh produce and a variety of local and exclusive products.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with our next episode. See you then.